Welcome to Water of the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Join us today as Pastor Steve looks at today's events already foretold by God's Word. The Bible stands alone. No other book in history has such specific and detailed descriptions of the world we live in right now. So come on along. May we all be refreshed and inspired as we are washed by the water of the Word.
I get asked it quite often, hey, Pastor Steve, is America in Bible prophecy? Yes, it is. And we're going to look at one today that I think just may be according to that description. Isaiah chapter 9, we're going to read it here in just a second. In Isaiah, what's happening is God raised up Isaiah, one of the great prophets of the Old Testament. And the reason is because, well, Israel was in trouble. Why are we going here today? I believe that there are two nations in the history of this planet that were purposefully and deliberately founded on the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Bible. One, of course, would be Israel. Can you think who the other one might be? It's America. And again, some people look at me funny, and they say, what? And they don't understand. Oh, I encourage you, loved ones in the Lord, do our history, our due diligence to get into the writings of our founding fathers. 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, right? Did you know that 29 of those signers had advanced theological degrees? The most prominent signature on the Declaration of Independence is John Hancock, who went on to be a governor of one of the 13 original states. And over 23 times, he called the entire state to fasting and prayer, close the shops, get to the churches, and ask for God's move and forgiveness. Wow. And by the way, has America been blessed? Yes, we have. With such a commitment to the Lord and His Word comes a great blessing. Have you noticed in the last 100 years the impact that America has made on the world? What inventions were here? Well, let's see. Well, we had the internet, and Al Gore, he invented that for us. The steam engine, so many things with Edison and the light bulb and electricity. So many. The aeroplane, the atom was first harnessed in the squash courts of Columbia University by Enrico Fermi, a German Jew who sought asylum in America. And of course, E equals MC squared. That was Einstein, again, seeking asylum away from Nazi Germany. He moved to America. That's not by accident, you guys. With great blessing comes great responsibility. What's happening here in Isaiah 9? Well, remember, Israel had sort of splintered into two factions. The leaders of the north were ungodly, starting all the way from a fellow by the name of Jeroboam. The subsequent kings of the northern portion, called Israel, the southern portion was referred to as Judah. The kings of Israel were making laws that were immoral and directly opposed to God's written word. There was a deep division in the nation. The liberal, more secular idolatrous migrated more or less to the north. The conservative, biblically minded migrated to the south. Have you noticed that even in our own country there is a strong divide? Violence was growing worse and worse. Idol worship was huge. And because of these abominations, just like God told him he would, in Deuteronomy chapter 24, there was drought in the land. Have we heard a little something about that, you guys? Do you know that 2 years ago, I noticed that 47% of the United States was in moderate to severe drought. You know what that number is today? 67%. Debt was crushing the northern 10 tribes. Have we heard a little something about debt, you guys? Do you know that we just broke 18 $1 trillion. And we can't get our brain around how big that is. And you know what the gross domestic product? That's every goods and services produced in America by every single American. It's how much did we make? How much did we earn? About $16.1 trillion. In other words, we are spending way more than we make. Now, how does that work for us in Washoe County when we do that? As I've said before, don't spend more than you make, because that might be a moving experience when you have to move out of your house because, well, you know what I'm talking about. And then desolation. And just like Deuteronomy 28 had said, there's going to be an army that God will allow to begin to knock on the outer edges. God says, I am your defense. As good as the military was, God says it's not the military keeping you out of hot water. It's my hand. The Assyrian army was being raised up. And at first, the first little inroad into God's people's land was a peripheral attack that was short in duration and locally contained. But eventually, in 722 BC, Samaria, which was the capital of the northern region, falls to Sargon II. And of course, they are taken away, are the northern 10 tribes, and the Bible describes as fish hooks, literal fish hooks, through the jaws of many of the people being deported back to Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. It kind of began, chapter 9, look at verse 8. Then the Lord sent a word against Jacob, and it has fallen on Israel. All the people will know, Ephraim and the inhabitants of Samaria, remember that was the capital of the northern region, who will say in pride and arrogance of heart, the bricks have fallen down. Yeah, those Assyrians have knocked over some of our important buildings, but we will rebuild with hewn stones. And the sycamores, which was a valuable tree in the land at this point, the sycamores are cut down, no problem, said the leaders. We will replace them with cedars. Evergreen trees, bigger, faster, stronger, cooler. Therefore the Lord shall set up the adversaries of Rezin against him and spur his enemies on. Verse 12, the Syrians before and the Philistines behind, they shall devour Israel with an open mouth. And right in your margin, 722 BC, it had happened. Does that sound familiar? The leaders were ungodly. They were passing laws that were immoral and directly opposed to God's written word. There was a deep division in the land. Violence was growing worse and worse. Idol worship was huge. Listen to Jonathan Kahn. Jonathan Kahn is a researcher, and he has an extensive Jewish background. In his book, The Mystery of the Shemitah, listen to what he says. What are the signs of a nation in danger of judgment? According to Isaiah 9, verse 10, years before the destruction actually falls, there is a warning given. The nation's hedge of protection is removed. Its borders and national security are breached. An enemy is allowed to make a strike into the land. At first, the strike is contained, limited in time and scope. It is a shaking. It is a wake-up call. It is an alarm. The nation is then given a grace period to either turn back to God or continue on its course and head to destruction. I've got some slides for you. Let's dim the house lights. First of all, a couple dates. Go ahead with our first slide. That's Federal Hall currently. It was built in 1842. See the statue there? That's George Washington. Before this was built in 1842, it looked like this. That building was Federal Hall. It was constructed in the year 1700. That buggy, you see the buggy there parked on the street and the people walking? That street is Wall Street. Do you see to the left of the frame, there's a church spire? That's Trinity Church for many, many years. Before Washington, D.C. was conceived, designed, and built, the entire federal government, constitutional government, I should say, began in that building, Federal Hall. And can you see what looks like there on the second floor? It's a bit of a patio, a porticoture. It's open to the outside. That'll be important in a minute. July 4th, 1776, the Declaration of Independence. It takes, interestingly enough, 7 years for the forces of America to finally fight to a stalemate and beyond the British forces. And in the Treaty of Paris, 1783, America becomes its own nation. But in 1781, all 13 colonies, they ratify a form of government called the Articles of Confederation. You remember that? Now, the problem there was the 13 states were so over the oppressive hand of the crown of King George III, they really didn't want any sort of federal oversight whatsoever. And so it really was 13 sort of independent states, and that wasn't working out so well. They couldn't raise enough taxes for a federal government, nor could they raise enough money for a common defense or military defense. And a lot of our exports were being captured on the high seas, many of them, interestingly enough, off the shores of North Africa with the Muslim caliphs and pirates therein. So that wasn't working out. So what happens in 1787? The Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, overseen by George Washington. And they come up with the most amazing form of government that the world had ever seen. Oh, loved ones, we enjoy this freedom, don't we? We live in a constitutional republic. But back when it was conceived, nobody else was doing it. How in the world did they come up with such sublime? You know what the word sublime means, right? Well above and beyond. How did they come up with such sublime political science? Because George Washington et al. Made it a point to pray and fast. And they did. And God gave them a tremendous idea. You need an executive, but we don't want a king. So the presidency was conceptualized. And then you have to have your legislature, which is to say those that make up the laws of the land. And the big state says, good idea. Let's have this governmental body based on representatives from population. Virginia loved that. And little Rhode Island went, I don't think so, because you'll squash us. And then they came up with this ingenious idea of a two-house system. The Senate, equal representation, two from each state, and then the House of Representatives based on population. It was amazing. And then to make sure that these two jokers were doing according to the Constitution, namely the Bill of Rights, let's conceptualize the judicial branch. And this three-pronged system, every 4th of July, celebrates a world record, you guys. Would you agree with me that it was pretty profound? Well, the first constitutional government that was elected was George Washington is the president. Go ahead and go to our next slide. Let's zoom in on that porticature at the federal building. If you were to look to your left and down, that's Wall Street. At the end of Wall Street, you'll see the spire. See the blue circle? That's Trinity Church. And even depicted on this inaugural day, by the way, this is April 30th, 1789. And it's under construction is Trinity Church because it was destroyed at the Battle of Long Island, also the Battle of Brooklyn Heights, when the British destroyed as they took New York. So here they are many years later, and this is the first constitutional government. And there's our boy George Washington, holding the Bible, as Secretary of State James Otis. To his left, see the guy in the black robes? That's Chancellor of New York, Robert Livingston. He was the highest judicial figure in America at the time and a signer of the Declaration of Independence. If I had time, I'd take you around the whole room there. Depicted there is the entire executive branch, because John Adams is there. the House and the Senate, and the Supreme Court, the entire first constitutional government of America. There it is. Let me read you what appeared in the Gazette of the United States, the leading newspaper of New York, a week in front of this event, April 23rd, and I quote, "On the morning of the day, our illustrious leader, George Washington, will be invested in his office. The bells will ring at 9 o'clock. What bells do you suppose they're speaking of? Church bells. When the people will go to the house of God in a solemn manner and commit the new government with its important train of consequences to holy protection and the blessing of the Most High God." And then it adds, "An early hour is prudently fixed for this act of devotion and is designed wholly for prayer." That was the leading newspaper of New York at the time. At his first inaugural address, do you know the story that even after King George suffered that stinging defeat of losing the colonies, and he begrudgingly agreed to the Treaty of Paris, he was amazed that George Washington, after such stunning victory, resigned his commission, moved back to Mount Vernon. King George III was known to say, "He is an extraordinary man. He had the entire region in the palm of his hand." Pretty amazing. In his first inaugural address, listen to the first president of our United States. "Every step with which we have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency." That's formal talk for, it's a God thing. And we ought to be no less persuaded that the favorable smiles from heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained. If you agree with that, would you say with me, Amen? What did they do? After this inauguration, hand on the Bible, they went down to the first floor and out the building. Then they made a right on Wall Street, all the way down to Trinity Church. And because it was under construction, they made a right, and you know what that street's called? Broadway. And they made their way to a little baby chapel called St. Paul's Chapel. This whole group, practically everybody on your money, everyone, the founding, you want to know what was on the hearts of these people? Well, the Congressional Record of April 30th, 1789, tells us what happened. The President and Vice President, John Adams, the entire Senate and House of Representatives, and company all proceeded down Wall Street, turned right on Broadway, and walked to St. Paul's Chapel. There, they heard the readings of Chaplain of Congress, who read to them Psalm 144, through 150. You got to read that at some time. Psalm 144, one of the verses is, "The Lord is my high tower." That's important here in a minute. From the book of Acts, from 1 Kings, and the third letter of the Apostle John. Then it goes on to say, then they prayed for the next 2 hours. All right, with that in mind, go ahead and go to our next slide. There's Trinity Church today, you guys. Yeah, it's a little dwarfed by its neighbors. Hit the go button. That is St. Paul's Chapel. That is, you're looking, the North Tower of the World Trade Center was still there. That would be its view. Now, I want you to notice, there it is, I think that's roughly in the 1940s. And there are very prominent Americans that are buried in that graveyard. Hit the go button. That's what St. Paul's Chapel looked like the morning of September 11th, the year 2001. That door that you're seeing is the western entrance. That's the door that George Washington and the entire brand new first constitutional governor of this country, the very first thing they did was consecrate this new nation and this new government to the Most High God, and then prayed God's favor upon it. They walked through that door right there. Okay? Notice the tree, if you will, up on the left-hand side of the frame. From St. Paul's Chapel to the North Tower, hit our go button. Let's take you to the lower end of Manhattan. And you'll see in the upper left-hand corner a blue circle. That's the World Trade Center. Hit the go button again. Let's zoom in. There's a little closer view of it. You can see to the upper right corner, there's St. Paul's Chapel. Let me retrace for you what they did that morning of April the 30th, 1789. Hit our go button. They started at Federal Hall. Can you see it right there, circled in blue? They went down Wall Street, hit the go button again. They made a right at Trinity Church. Then they walked down Broadway and finally hit it again at St. Paul's Chapel. That was their route that day. Hit our go button. Here's another shot of it right there. As you can see, something amazing happened in that area. There is St. Paul's Church again. From St. Paul Chapel to the North Tower, when it stood, it was only 800 feet away. The tower itself was 110 floors and was 1,368 feet tall. Had it have fallen over in that direction, of course, it would have collapsed right on that little chapel. By the time both towers collapsed, 20 million tons of debris fell from that staggering height of 1,386 feet. How many buildings in the World Trade Center complex at that time? There are seven. Fascinating to me. All seven buildings of the World Trade Center were destroyed. The last to go was number seven, the 40 floors, which finally would collapse later. Hit our go button one more time. There is St. Paul's Chapel, the morning, as it were, of September 11th. Notice the tree to the left. Something truly miraculous happened. A girder falling from over 1,300 feet hurtled down towards St. Paul's Chapel. It got caught in that tree to the left. It hit that tree with such force that it pulled the tree over, exposing its root ball. All the destruction, all seven buildings of the World Trade Center were destroyed by the impact of those buildings falling. Some of them were about the same distance as St. Paul's Chapel. Yet when the dust settled, please hear me, beloved, not one window was cracked. And when that girder fell and knocked over that little tree there to the left, and that root ball was exposed, the lore, the miracle story, was forever sort of remembered by this. Hit our go button. This spider-looking thing, what's that doing? When they took the root ball, because of this great miracle that divine providence had saved St. Paul's Chapel, that's where our first government prayed. They hosed off all the dirt and debris. And then a guy by the name of Steve Tobin, an artist, he cast the root system in bronze and then filled the spaces with hot bronze. And that is a bronze statue of the root ball of the miracle tree that saved St. Paul's Chapel. What kind of tree do you suppose that was? It was a sycamore tree.
You've been listening to a recent prophetic update by Pastor Steve. What a comfort to know that no matter what the headlines are saying, everything is proceeding just as God has foretold. If you missed any of today's message or would like to hear it in its full, unedited format, you can watch this or any of Pastor Steve's teachings at our website. Just visit us at harvestreno.org. That's www.harvestreno.org. Come join us Sundays at 10:30 and Wednesday evenings at 6:30. Harvest is located at 350 South Rock Boulevard in Reno. Until next time, Pastor Steve encourages all of us to follow Acts 2:42 and Word, Worship, Prayer, and Fellowship every day. May the Lord bless you and keep you as we are washed by the water of the Word.